Hello, nature lovers. Welcome to the Loudoun Wildlife Conservancy podcast. This is a podcast about wildlife, habitats, and happenings right here in Loudoun County, Virginia, with ideas and activities for you to get outdoors and explore nature. I'm Nicole Hamilton, and this is episode number 8. Today we're going to talk about the eastern box turtle, and then after that I'll give you a quick update on upcoming programs and activities for the week. Just as an aside, I am recording this episode outdoors today because it's such a splendid September afternoon, so you'll be able to hear, hopefully, some of the birds that are flying around and talking, and then also some of the insects, like the crickets and other insects that are singing today, too. And I'll apologize in advance for any traffic noise that you happen to hear. I can't really stop that part, but I wanted you to hear the nice birds and stuff that are going on out here, too. So, box turtles. They're seen more often this time of year as they start to migrate within their territories to the places where they overwinter. I've seen 3 box turtles on the Dulles Toll Road in the last 2 weeks. 2, unfortunately, were dead, and the other was peering out from a guardrail. And when I saw it, I quickly zipped around on the next exit and spun back to where it was. But when I got there, to where it was already gone. Thankfully, I believe it had turned around in search of another route rather than trying to cross the busy highway. Then just yesterday, one of at least 2 box turtles that live in our yard walked past our window. Now, a few interesting things about this individual. Every time I see a turtle in our yard, I photograph it so I have a good clear image of the design on its shell. These markings can be used to identify individuals, and you can get a feel for how many box turtle claim your property as their territory. This past June, I was working at my desk and I saw a turtle walk past the window. I grabbed my camera and went out and took its picture. Then I came back in and compared it to past box turtle pictures I had. And lo and behold, 7 years ago, this turtle and I first met, right here in the same spot. And it looked like it hadn't aged a day, although I'm sure I had a few more gray hairs. By the time I had checked out the shot and gone back outside, my turtle friend had disappeared back under the blackberry thickets. But then yesterday, there I was again at my desk, and I looked out the window just at the right time, and there he was again, 6 months later, but on almost the exact same path through the yard, heading in the same direction. It made me wonder what this turtle's route through the neighborhood could be, but I was glad to have seen him again. So the eastern box turtle. This is a turtle that many of you have probably encountered in your yards as well, or perhaps even helped across the road. They have brightly colored shells with black and then orange or yellow, and have a hinge on their bottom shells that act as doors that they can shut if threatened. Now, how did I know that the turtle in our yard yesterday was a he? Well, I looked him in the eye, of course. The eyes of the males are red, while the eyes of females are more of a yellowish-brown. Another indicator is the shape of the shell. Say that 10 times fast. The carapace, or the top shell, of the females tends to be more domed, and then on the bottom, the plastron, or the bottom shell, of the males is concave, while the females have more of a flat or slightly convex plastron. So when you meet up with a turtle, that's how you can tell and address them properly. Box turtles prefer a mix of habitats, including densely shrubby kind of tangle areas. As with other wildlife, they need their habitat to be left natural. Cleaning up the forest is bad for them. They like to have soft forest soils with thick leaf litter and plenty of down logs and branches, as well as shady woods, ample sources of water, and open sunny areas for nesting. Although they are primarily terrestrial, they use wetlands and will readily cross deep streams and even go for a dip in a pond. I'll tell just one more turtle story and then get back to the facts. This past summer, I met up with a female box turtle in our front yard. She was walking along our driveway, which didn't seem to be a good idea since my husband was still on his way home. So I took her about 10 feet over to our garden that has a frog pond in it. It was a really hot day and she felt kind of light, so I put her on my palm and lowered her to the water. And this was what was kind of neat. Rather than get away, she sat on my hand and drank, and it was just incredible. I felt like I could feel her filling up with water. It was just really funny. After she was finished, she motioned with her legs, and I placed her on the garden floor just underneath some Joe Pye weed, and then she sauntered off into the garden. I wonder now if she met up with that male from a few weeks earlier, or if they missed each other, kind of like turtles passing in the night. Box turtles have been around for about 15 million years. Compare that with our opossum, which has been around for about 60 million years, and Homo sapiens, us, who have been around for only 200,000 years. So 15 million years versus 200,000 years. I think that's a good indication that we should probably respect our elders. Natural mortality for box turtles is high in the early stages of life, during the egg, the hatchling, and the juvenile stages, but it declines significantly as the turtles reach adulthood. The survival rate of adult turtles on an annual basis is typically greater than 95% when the habitat is good, and the lifespan of box turtles is readily verified at over 50 years in the wild, but there are also records of individuals exceeding 100 years old. Interesting thing here is you can only tell the age of a box turtle with certainty up to about age 18 to 20. Until that time, age can be determined by counting the growth rings on the plates covering the shell. After 20 years old, the shell no longer grows to accommodate the growth rings, and they get smashed together until they're indistinguishable. The only way to tell for certainty if the turtle has been marked in a way that identifies the year in which it was first tagged and first identified. So if you knew in 1969 that the turtle had, 18 rings on its shell, then you could use that as that starting point and add on from there. In the 17 and 1800s, people would carve initials and dates into turtle shells, not something we advise now because it's not so good for the turtle. But using that method from some older turtles, we're able to track and find out that some box turtles have been as old as 130 years old. So that's pretty interesting too. One more quick turtle story. Also along the toll road, but last year, I was on my way to work and I found a box turtle alive and well walking along the breakdown lane. And when I got out, I pulled over and then went on over to where the box turtle was. And good news is, long story short, I did move the turtle, so all was well, and he went on his way. But the interesting thing was that he had red paint on his shell, and the red paint was in the mark of a number 2. So I helped this little guy off the roadway, but whenever I get close to that exit, I always think about number 2, and I wonder who's recording that data, and when did they last see it, and what sort of history do they know about that individual box turtle, who is no doubt older than me, and has probably been roaming that area for years and years. And then I also wonder, what happened to box turtle number 1? So, something to think about. But it's also the challenge. The interesting thing with the turtles is that they outlive the naturalists who are collecting the data on them. And with data repositories that are more ad hoc, we can just see the importance of trying to keep good records and working together in order to save that data. Like humans, box turtles are slow to reach sexual maturity, and they begin to reproduce only after they get to about age 7, although I saw some other information that said that they don't reach maturity until about age 15 to 20. A long life together with multiple years of reproduction tries to compensate for low survival rates of hatchlings and juveniles, but also makes the population highly dependent on the success of the adults. Long-term studies of turtle populations have shown that when you have an annual loss of as few as 2 to 3% of adults, so say 2 to 3 adult turtles are hit by cars on the Dulles Toll Road, you could see the downward slope of the population in that area and its ultimate demise for that area because reproduction can't keep up with the loss. But back to happier thoughts. Box turtles are basically land turtles. They drink from time to time and will sit and soak in shallow water. They need both meadows and open woods to help control their body temperature. And they'll move between these places, spending maybe the cooler parts of summer mornings and evenings in meadows, and then hanging out in the moist woodlands during the heat of the day. So they really need both habitats. They eat quite a variety of things that include earthworms, slugs, some insects, mushrooms, berries, and even carrion. In gardens, they might eat fruit, fruit that's maybe fallen from a tree, tomatoes, corn on the cob, and box turtles are also one of the most important distributors of mayapple seeds, since mayapples are one of their favorites. So if you have mayapples and you like them, and you have turtles, then you have a really great relationship there. But now let me paint the picture of their life cycle. In springtime, starting around April, after a few warm, rainy days, the box turtles emerge from their underground hibernation spots and start moving around, looking for their first meal in many months. We often see them along roads or walking through our yards at this time. And this is an important time because as we get ready to rev up the lawnmower in spring, it's definitely a good idea to check the area first so we don't run over them and crack their shells. Spring is also the courtship time for turtles, as it is for other animals, and so as turtles emerge from the hibernation, they also start looking for a mate. With good luck, the male and the female find each other, and we do say that it's with luck that they do find each other. Even though they have the ability to track each other through scents, apparently from studies that have been done, it's more like they stumble upon each other. Once they do find each other, they have this ritual that involves the male chasing after the female, if you can imagine that, and then nipping at her. And I don't know how I feel about that. But anyway, after they decide that this is a good pairing, then they mate. The female then heads off to lay the eggs. An interesting thing is that the female is able to store the sperm from the mating for several years so that she can lay her eggs when she finds a warm, sandy hill in the spring or the early summer. So that's another interesting technique that they have evolved to prolong their species, which is kind of cool. Female box turtles seek unmowed or lightly mowed meadows, lawns, or flower gardens to nest in, and they spend most of their lives in the area of about the size of an acre, while males will wander in more of a 10-acre home range, so they have a larger area that they go in search of the gals. As we head into fall in October and November, the box turtle will dig a slanting tunnel under soil and mulch where they'll remain cool but protected from freezing. In mild winters, the carapace might remain visible throughout the season, and most turtles, when they overwinter, their carapaces will be just a few inches below the soil surface. Some turtles may dig into root tunnels or old tree stumps. Some may bury themselves along slopes or under blackberry thickets or in mammal burrows. The same overwintering sites may be used year after year, and this is all part of their knowledge of and their fidelity to their home territory. During hibernation, all bodily functions slow down and almost stop. They survive by drawing on their stored resources of energy and emerge much lighter in the spring. Box turtles are interesting because they can tolerate freezing and are the largest animal to have this ability. In terms of the status, box turtles are disappearing from landscapes all across our region. Adult turtles are relatively safe from wild predators. Their shells are thick and they can close tightly enough to repel inquiring fox teeth or raccoon fingers. They can adapt to some freezing, can store water in their bladders to cope with short periods of drought, and they are so liberal in their food choices that they can usually find something to eat. In the intact forest, they can live out their slow lives for decades, but none of this offers protection from human threats such as suburbia and development, which overwhelms their forest homes. Habitat destruction, alteration, and fragmentation all threaten eastern box turtle populations. Habitats are fragmented and altered when roads and power lines transect them, or when they are closely mowed or clear-cut. Mowing and clear-cutting allow more sunlight and wind to penetrate, which results in higher temperature in warmer weathers, lower temperatures in colder weathers, and the potential for stronger winds. Because box turtles are generalists, they can benefit from weedy fields and blackberry thickets that grow under electrical and telephone lines, but these places can be deadly when turtles come in contact with tractors and mowers. Additionally, mowed roadsides, lawns, and cell tower fields offer turtles and many other species nothing in the way of food or shelter. Hand in hand with the habitat destruction is the impact of roadways themselves. So, why did the turtle cross the road? Well, probably because the road wasn't there when it found the great spots in its range to nest, find food, find shelter, and overwinter. The turtle may be moving from a specific spot where it lays its eggs to the summer range or to the place where they're going to overwinter. They have different needs at different times of the year, and they require this varied habitat. Roadways with high traffic volumes become impenetrable barriers, and even those that are more quiet country roads are dead zones for turtles as they try to cross them. For those who don't try to cross the road, their populations become isolated. Populations of turtles in urbanized or fragmented habitats may become composed mostly of aging or non-reproducing adults and cut them off from populations because they don't survive the road crossings. If there aren't enough turtles within a turtle's normal range of area, they may not meet frequently enough to mate and produce offspring. Turtles you might observe in urban parks or in isolated forest fragments could be members of a population that is on a long, slow slide towards extinction because of this fragmented habitat and the roads that box them in. Another issue is collection. Collection of box turtles for the domestic and international pet trade has contributed to the decline and extirpation of eastern box turtles in many areas. Between the late 1980s and early 1990s, just a 10-year period of not long ago, over 100,000 wild box turtles from the United States were exported to Europe, Japan, and Hong Kong. It was recognized in the mid-1990s that without protection, the eastern box turtle could become extinct, and so it was listed in Appendix 2 of the Convention on the International Trade of Endangered Species of Wild Flora and Fauna in 1994. Although international trade has stopped, domestic and black market collection within the United States still continues to the detriment of our wild box turtle populations. Beyond the pet trade, people often spot box turtles and take them home for pets. This is bad for the individual box turtle because they may not get the right diet they need, plus being caged is awful. Then, if the people do release the turtle, they often don't bring it back to its original home territory, and the turtle is faced with trying to get back to its home location or perishing because it doesn't know the lay of the land of the new area. When you think about it, taking an adult out of the wild has the same impact as running it over in the road. So, what can you do? If you have box turtle habitat, especially if you have seen box turtles in your yard or neighborhood, try to provide everything it needs to be close to its home. Provide a variety of habitat. They need wet soils to remain moist and open. The moist soils provide rest for them on hot days and a variety of foods and water. And any wet space, a swamp, a marsh, a damp forest depression, may be absolutely essential to the survival in that locality. So if your property or your neighborhood already has that kind of habitat, try to protect it and make sure that it's not developed. If your property prior to development had wetlands around it, you can rebuild it. A bog or a marshy area that you can recreate can be a wonderful garden. Just make sure your property has a variety of native foods, and then leave places for insects and mushrooms and other fungi to flourish. In the sun, you can encourage dense clusters of brambles, and then if you have any rotting any fruit trees, you can let the rotting fruit fall, and the turtles will have that for food. You also should provide a sunny spot for the turtles to bask and reproduce. Eastern box turtles seek the sun, both seasonally and then by the hour if it's a hot day, and successful nesting demands clear patches of warm sand under an open sky. So keep large, isolated clearings like a perennial gardens or meadow, such as over a drain field, and you might be able to have places for turtles to nest and seek refuge. We actually, in our drain field here, part of it is an area that we mow and keep maybe 6 inches tall, something like that, and the other part is a perennial garden, and I have actually, over the last few years that we've been in this area, we have had a box turtle nesting in that, so it was pretty cool to see. And then also think about the weather in the wintertime. Cold weather forces the box turtles undercover or underground, so preserve areas with mature trees and soft, loose soil. Let leafy branches lie where they fall, and expand brush piles during the growing season. And then when you see turtles crossing the road, this is an important one because this is probably the most frequent time that we'll encounter box turtles, unless they're coming through our yard. The best thing to do if you do encounter one is, after safely pulling over, take the turtle, just pick it up and carry it in the direction that it was headed. If you take it in a different direction, it will probably try to reorient itself and head back in the direction that it was trying to go. So it's best to just kind of take it across the road and let it complete its task in that way. Some well-intentioned people may try to move the turtles to other locations that seem safer, like to a park or other areas, but box turtles have very strong fidelity to their home ranges, and if relocated to another place, they will actually try to walk miles and miles to get back to it. Or if they stay in the new location, they may perish from not knowing the places to find food, shelter, and the overwintering spots. So that's some more info on things that you can do. If you want to learn more about box turtles, we have a page on our website dedicated to turtles, and we list all the great books, like the one by Ken Dodd called North American Box Turtles, A Natural History, as well as journal writings like the Swamp Walker's Journal. And then we also have links to other organizations that are focused on box turtles. You can check it all out at www.loudonwildlife.org and click on Educational Resources. Then about halfway down, you'll see Books and Resources, and you can go to the drop-down menu and head on over to the turtle page. So, and there's also a really neat resource out there for teachers called The Turtle Connection. This is an ebook by Ann Summers and Catherine Matthews. It has all kinds of information about box turtles, as well as half a book of lesson plans for teaching kids about box turtles and their habitat needs. You can search for it online, and it's a really good resource. I actually drew on that book for this podcast, and it has a lot of great information. I also drew upon a great article called Box Turtles, What Can We... box turtles, Can We Save Them Before It's Too Late? By Chris Swarth of the Audubon Naturalist Society. And another article, or I guess it's more than an article because it's pretty long, but another document called Massachusetts Forestry Conservation Management Practices for Eastern Box Turtles by Leslie Bull. Both are really good resources on box turtles and have a lot more information. I'll actually end this part of our episode with a reading from the ebook, Turtle Connection. It's a writing by Ann Summers. Ann writes, "There on the path was a box turtle. She paused and looked at me curiously. I squatted down, fascinated by the subtle colors that moments earlier had so easily concealed the splendid creature in the leaves. I remember the joy of the unexpected discovery and the warm feeling I experienced when I picked her up. We made eye contact, each checking out the other through the window to the soul. It was as if the turtle and I shared a private experience, some intimacy, some connection. For me, it was like getting a present. I now recognize that others, too, feel it, and that it never goes away, no matter how many box turtles you might meet." I think Anne captured that really well, and I wish you to have many meetings with box turtles in your lifetime, too. So now for an update on our upcoming programs and activities. Birding the Appalachian Trail and Hawk Watch. It's coming up this Saturday, September 20th from 8 to 2. And you can join us as we do a hike along the Appalachian Trail in search of migrants in the morning. We'll hike along a section of the trail that leads to a beautiful waterfall. And then around 11 o'clock, we'll meet up with Liam McGranahan, who's a master falconer and educator at the Snickers Gap Hawk Watch. And we'll meet there for a few hours of hawk watching. If we're lucky, we might see a push of broadwing hawks go through. So you'll want to bring a chair and lunch and meet us at 8 a.m. at Snickers Gap Hawk Watch to carpool, and then we'll head on our way. And then also on Saturday, September 20th and 21st, you can visit us at the Bluemont Fair. Loudon Wildlife Conservancy will have our fair booth set up, and we'll have all of our different publications up for you to take, and we'll have folks there to answer nature and wildlife questions and all kinds of things. So stop on by. You can purchase an LWC t-shirt or a hat as well. And if you're not yet a member, stop on by and we can tell you more about the organization. And then on Sunday, September 21st at 1 p.m., we're doing Sunday in the Preserve. So you can join a naturalist from Loudon Wildlife Conservancy and the Friends of Banshee Reeks over at Banshee. And we'll do an informal family walk around the preserve, and we'll search for the different natural wonders that make Banshee Reeks such a special place. So some neat stuff coming up this weekend. So that about wraps it up for this episode of our podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it, and I hope that you'll scan the roadways for turtles in the coming weeks and help them across the road as they journey to their wintering sites. Box turtles are pretty cool, and you know, we definitely want to make sure that they're around for years and years to come, well past our own lifetimes. So I hope you'll tune in again next week. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you along the trails.